time for a sofa upgrade? Introducing Anabe Sofas, where designer style meets budget-friendly prices. Every Anabe sofa is modular, allowing you to rearrange your space effortlessly. Perfect for both small and large spaces, Anabe is the only machine-washable sofa inside and out. Say goodbye to stains and messes with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics that make cleaning easy. Liquids simply slide right off. Designed for custom comfort, our high-resilience foam lets you choose between a sink and feel or a supportive memory foam blend. Plus, our pet-friendly, stain-resistant fabrics ensure your sofa stays beautiful for years. Don't compromise quality for price. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your living space today. Sofas start at just $699 with no-risk returns and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Get early access to Black Friday now. The biggest sale of the year can save you up to 60% off, plus free shipping and free returns. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
It is the winter of 1848, Brunswick, Maine, Bowdoin College. A young man, his name is Joshua Lawrence Chamberlain, called Lawrence, stands before the faculty. The test is to enter Bowdoin late. This is the second term. And he's prepared for this all his life. I welcome Ronald White. He's the author of a new biography of Joshua Lawrence Chamberlain, entitled On Great Fields, The Life and Unlikely Heroism of Joshua Lawrence Chamberlain, called Lawrence. Ron, a very good evening to you. Thank you very much and congratulations. That moment, Lawrence was standing before a faculty. He could only dream of being a member of the Bowdoin College. I think there were more than 100 students at the time. There were 8 faculty members. What is it that they were asking him to do? How did he perform that day? And what does it mean about his skill that he could memorize at that length? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Well, this was a classical education. And so, yes, as you suggest, he was asked to say from memory some of the classics of Greek and Roman literature, as well as saying in Greek from the New Testament. So this was a frightening moment in a way, but as you suggest also, he had prepared for it. In fact, he'd actually delayed his entrance so that he knew he was fully sufficient in using Greek. It was quite a moment. It was almost an inquisition, and yet he was excited to be a part of it and to become a student at Bowdoin College.
He will be 20 years old this year. He was born in 1828. We need to go back to his origins. Brewer, Maine, on the Penobscot River across from Bangor. His father and mother were hardy Congregationalists. Mother was born 1803. Father was born 1799. He loved his parents. Who were they in Brewer? What did they do?
His father was a farmer. They were, I would call them, 19th century Puritans. Puritanism has taken a bad rap in recent years from academics, but for them, Puritanism was the life of the mind. And so he grew up both with a deep Christian faith and with intellectual curiosity. Not necessarily to read novels, they were a little worried about that, but this was a family that promoted the life of the mind.
He could memorize. He memorized for the church, he memorized for his education, he memorized for Bowdoin. It's a skill that he perfected. Was that commonplace, or was he regarded as unusual at the time?
It was commonplace. I fear, as we have young people today who say, I can look it up on Google, he memorized the 107 questions and answers of the Westminster Shorter Catechism. Question 1, what is the chief end of man? Answer 1, man's chief end is to glorify God and enjoy him forever. For him, it wasn't simply an intellectual exercise. It was part of the heart as well as the mind.
And yet he had a perfect boy's life. His father took him shooting, gunning, sailing. He could swim the Penobscot in all that boat traffic. The major industry at this moment in early in his life is boat building. And Bangor was a town of 3,000. Brewer's much smaller, I believe. Much smaller. Still is.
Much smaller. Maybe 1,000.
But it's right across the river, and so he would swim. I was That image of him swimming between the boats is wonderful. He could sail, he could shoot, he could ride. Ride bareback? Was he that good?
He was a bareback rider. Yes, he was. Mm-hmm.
And so he has a life of the physical life. At 17, he becomes a school teacher. Where?
Well, he became a school teacher in two different towns, especially the continually beautiful town of Wiscasset. And there he had to confront some tough boys in the classroom, but he figured out how to handle them. He actually put one of them down with his fist. And then when the father objected, he said, well, I'm actually care for your son. And the father said, you did the right thing. And he came to see the boy every afternoon until he readmitted him to the classroom.
And when he's 11 years old, his father goes off to the Aroostook War. What did he think of that?
Well, I think he admired his father. This was the lineage of the family, the French and Indian War, the Revolutionary War, the War of 1812. So this was part of what he understood to be a person, a boy and a man growing up.
And what we're seeing here is a young man who has skills to make him an educated man, also a pastor, and skills to make him a soldier. Looks to be the two poles of his life. Did he try to choose between them?
His parents had very different ideas for who he should be. After graduation from Bowdoin, his mother wanted him to be a minister or missionary. His father wanted him to go to West Point. So he was torn between these two visions.
Instead, he arrives at the Bangor Seminary. What did he hope to achieve at the seminary? Was that testing the waters? He stuck it out
for 3 years. That's a good way to say it. It did test the waters. He had learned seven languages, if you can believe that, at Bowdoin. Now at Bangor Theological Seminary, he learned two more, Arabic and Syriac. But because he did not become an ordained minister, those 3 years have been forgotten. I felt that those 3 years were also important in the formation of him, and I wanted to make that part of the story, so I gave it a full chapter.
Yes, it's extremely helpful, Ron. We always, when we come up against a Civil War hero, go right to the battle.
That's right.
And you don't know what is standing there in the uniform and what its background is. This is a man who you would say, if you came across him in his 20s, he'll never be a hero on the Civil War battlefield.
No.
This is a scholar, and he's very careful about memorizing. Having never traveled, he has all those languages. And now, importantly, Fanny. Who is Fanny?
Well, Fanny is a remarkable young woman, hard to understand in the 21st century what her parents did in the 19th century. Her father and mother, this was their seventh child. Her father was 50 years old enough to be her grandfather. And so when she was four, they gave her to the father's younger cousin, the pastor of First Church in Brunswick, and they became her parents.
It's a puzzle. Fanny's childhood is marked by something. If this was a novel, Ron, that would be a moment of great crisis for any child at four,
right,
to never see your mom and dad again. She was raised well in Brewer. However, there seems to be a shadow over her life. We can't do psychology at this distance, but it seems the whole thing seems irregular. Or did she regard it as routine?
Well, it was somewhat routine, but it was irregular. If I may, I want to characterize Fanny by reading this one section that when she was a 17-year-old high school student, her teacher, Mr. Alfred Pike, had asked the students to compose a paper using verbs ending in FY. And she knew the teacher did not particularly appreciate her humor, so she wrote this. This is to certify, notify, exemplify, testify, and signify my obedient disposition. And I hope that it will gratify, satisfy, beautify, and edify my teacher, and pacify, modify, and nullify his feelings of dissatisfaction toward me. Please do not explain O-Fi when reading this paper. So young Fanny was smart, and she knew it.
I also challenged the professor. So we come.
She challenged the professor. That's
we come to the fact that Lawrence, in addition to everything else, had a musical talent. He created his own instrument, and was at church when he saw Fanny for the first time. Was it love at first sight for Lawrence?
I think it may have been. He was leading the choir. She was playing the organ, and pretty soon he wasn't looking at the choir. He was looking at the organist.
But the tragedy that comes again and again through the life is she has doubts. Why?
Well, she has doubts about herself. Her father, stepfather, really, Reverend George Adams, for us, kept a wonderful diary. But again and again, he refers to her as poor Fanny. Poor Fanny. She struggled with depression. She had very great difficulties with her eyes. She would ultimately go blind as an older woman. So she struggled with her own sense of self.
She spends three years in the South as a ward of a Milledgeville, my memory, somewhere in Georgia.
Yes. Milledgeville was then the state capital of Georgia. She did what a lot of young women did in New England. They went south to teach. She played the organ at First Presbyterian Church. So they were away from each other for three full years.
Milledgeville. I smiled when I read that part of your book. The story is that Sherman's troops, when they marched through, poured molasses on the organ at the church in order to wreck it permanently. I don't know if it did or not, but it's strange how your telling of a real story comes again and again to the ironies of the Civil War ahead of it when the country was torn apart. They fall in love. She returns. And now we need to move to the chapter of the marriage and afterwards. The book is On Great Fields, The Life and Unlikely Heroism of Joshua Lawrence Chamberlain. Ronald White is the author. I'm John Batchelor.
She's been thinking about this sleepover all week, but I think about her food allergies all the time. Fortunately, her doctor prescribes Olaire, omalizumab. It's proven to significantly reduce allergic reactions if a food allergy accident happens.
Xolair 150 milligrams is a prescription medication used to treat food allergy in people 1 year of age and older to reduce allergic reactions due to accidental exposure to one or more foods. While taking Xolair, you should continue to avoid all foods to which you are allergic. Don't use if you are allergic to Xolair. Xolair may cause a severe, life-threatening allergic reaction called anaphylaxis. Tell your doctor if you ever had anaphylaxis. Get help right away if you have trouble breathing or if you have swelling of your throat or tongue. Xolair should not be used for the emergency treatment of allergic reactions, including anaphylaxis. Xolair is for maintenance use to reduce allergic reactions, including anaphylaxis, while avoiding food allergens. Serious side effects such as cancer, fever, muscle aches and rash, parasitic infection, or heart and circulation problems have been reported. Please see Xolair.com for full prescribing information. Ask an allergist about Xolair. This is an advertisement for Xolair paid for by Genentech and Novartis.
We track so many things in our lives. Trending podcasts, playlists, even your favorite artist's next album release. It's time for an easy way to track your glucose. Meet Stelo, the powerful glucose biosensor available without a prescription that tracks glucose 24/7 to reveal how food, exercise, and even sleep can affect your glucose, helping you become a healthier you. Join the personal health revolution today at Stelo.com.
Love the night? Reach for Zin After Dark, a limited cocktail-inspired series for those who get up when the sun goes down. Try Zin's Mojito, Spiced Cider, and Espresso Martini nicotine pouches. Find them at select retailers. Available while supplies last. Zin After Dark. Bring on the night. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.